On the right, filling in for Greg Hughes, I'm Chris Blake. Tesla runs out of gas.
The biggest rally in the state LGB history tonight at 6 o'clock at the Capitol.
Do you want to see billboards on scenic byways? Stay tuned on both sides of the aisle. But first, this news. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and on the political right, filling in for Greg Hughes is Chris Blake.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Glad to have you, Chris, and we love your inside knowledge of Capitol Hill. And on the left, Jim DeBacchus.
When I need inside information on Capitol Hill, I go to Chris.
Chris is the man.
And I get it from Jim.
Capitol Hill guru, Chris Blake. You know, there's a lot to talk about on Capitol Hill, but I want to start out the program this morning by talking about the big news about Senator Lee's reelection campaign. You know, it's been announced that his reelection committee will be chaired by former Governor John Huntsman and co-chaired by Scott Anderson of Zions Bank. I work a lot in the business community, and this is really big news. This shows a very prominent business leader in Scott Anderson lining up behind Senator Lee. How do you react to that, Jim?
I think it's a sad day.
Okay. From the political left? And anything more you want to say? You're going to leave it at that.
Look, I believe that Mike Lee has been a tremendous detriment to the people of the state of Utah, not to mention the country. If he did no other thing other than cost the taxpayers of this country $23 billion with his stunt of closing down the government, that enough should be a warning. Unfortunately, you get someone who gets the power of being a U.S. senator and is probably who could be there the next 50 years if he lives as long as Orrin Hatch, and you find people that clamor there. I think it is a serious mistake. I think there's a lot better people out there that could represent the reasonable Republican conservative value, not an extremist like Mike Lee.
I'm starting right out with the division here.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've got the senator saying what he's saying, but this reelection committee also has Governor Bangeter, Jim Hansen, Harris Simmons of Zions Bank, and David Kirkham with the Tea Party. This sounds like a lot of coming together on the Republican Party side.
It absolutely is. This is a massive political victory for Senator Lee, and he's to be congratulated for recruiting these kinds of folks. You know, we've seen some of the negative comments that have come out from John Huntsman Sr., and so recruiting his son, who's an icon still in this state, is a big deal. And certainly Scott Anderson is a massive deal because he represents the Count My Vote compromise. Mm-hmm. He represents just such a significant impact of the business community. But I want to give Senator Lee credit. The last couple of years, I think we've seen a different Mike Lee. He's really focused on coming forward with constructive ideas that fit within the conservative framework. And I think people are recognizing that and seeing that and seeing the kind of Senator Lee that they want to see. Certainly the business community sounds like they're excited about it. It's a massive victory for Senator Lee.
Yeah. Well, from a political middle, I agree with you that Senator Lee's done some nice things in the past year. Particularly, I like his income tax proposal, where he's trying to be a very pro-family in what he does. I'm not satisfied yet on the immigration reform front, so I'm hoping we'll see more out of the good senator in that way. Another thing happened, staying in Washington, D.C. for just a minute. We had both our senators, Senator Hatch and Senator Lee, sign this letter, this open letter directed to the leaders of Iran that dealt with Obama's nuclear negotiations, trying to keep nuclear, you know, capabilities out of the Iranians' hands. This is very unique to see sitting senators writing to, you know, leaders of foreign governments basically saying we don't agree with what our commander-in-chief is doing. This is a different Washington than I'm used to, Chris.
You know, I don't think it's actually all that unusual. And if those 47 senators had signed on to an op-ed in the New York Times, nobody would be saying much about it. At first, I thought, man, sending a letter, is that unusual? But we've seen these kinds of tensions mm-hmm. between Congress and the executive branch before. We saw it, if you want to go back into the 80s, over Nicaragua and some of the things that happened there. And the House Democrats and Senate Democrats at the time passed the Boland Amendment. I believe that was what it was referred to, and kind of got involved in this. So this happens from time to time. We saw it with Clinton and the Republican Congress. So I'm not all that worked up about it, but it's clear this issue is fraught with a lot of peril. We just had Prime Minister Netanyahu speaking on this.
Yeah, a lot going on.
A lot going on.
I can tell that Jim's just wiggling in his seat, saying, can we talk about Capitol Hill? But he is a political guru. He knew how many people signed that letter. I didn't know that.
Look, Ed Boland, who was the author of the Boland Amendment in the 80s, that dealing with Nicaragua and foreign policy is an entirely different thing. When you get a group of senators who are subverting the foreign policy of the United States for political or whatever purposes, it sends a terrifically bad message. We used to have a saying that our divisions end where the shorelines of America, and we have one president at a time. It's hard enough for one president to do a foreign policy. What is a foreign leader supposed to do now? Mm-hmm. Come and negotiate with 535 people? And do we say, well, what does the representative from Ohio think about that? It is a new low. It is a kick to the United States of America's ability to be a big player in the world. And those senators, including Lee and Hatch, ought to be ashamed of themselves.
Well, we know they're just sending emails to Hillary Clinton's private email, Jim. So it's nothing we need to worry about. They can get a diplomat when they need to get one.
Exactly.
I could just save that for my gripe, you know. I mean, this notion that people are in public office doing business in private emails, I don't know how many times I've had discussions with usually newly minted public employees that will say, send it to my private email, as if that makes it exempt when they're doing public business. And it doesn't, as we all know. But that was quite the, I'm feeling it for the Hillary camp a little bit this week.
Yeah, they have kind of a rough start.
She had her
here.
Own server at her home.
Yeah. And
I mean, this was a new level. Did you know that, Jim?
I didn't know that. Doesn't everybody have their own server?
Yeah. These Cadillac, liberals do.
Absolutely.
I mean, we have a server at dinner, but we never have a server at breakfast.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And, the political implications are just interesting. Hillary Clinton is the presumptive nominee on the Democratic side and will certainly have a lot of support because of her gender. And I don't mean that just because of that, but she's certainly a transcendent figure. But, this is going to remind a lot of people of the 90s. And mm-hmm. Do we want to go through this again? And are we going to be tired of this? And so it will be interesting to see how they manage it. And it seems to me there's a little bit of an internal conflict within their camp. You've got the new Twitter generation political ops that are saying we need to be far more aggressive. We need mm-hmm. to be out there. News moves fast versus the old camp that's used to a much slower news cycle. So it'll be interesting to watch from that political angle, nothing else.
And on the Republican side, you're going to have young candidates, relatively speaking, and then over on the Democratic side, an older woman. And, that could be an interesting kind of generational thing.
I'm afraid we'll screw it up, Natalie, so no need to worry.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. In our next segment, we are going to talk about Healthy Utah and a lot of things on Capitol Hill. But before we get to that, Jim, can you just give us the update on where we stand right now with the religious liberties and non-discrimination legislation up here on Capitol Hill? This is where the big coming together was happening. Is it going to happen?
Tonight at 6 o'clock in the Capitol Rotunda, one way or another, there will be a giant rally, and we will, I'm hesitant to say because not all the T's are crossed and mm-hmm. all the I's, but one way or another, this will be a huge rally for unity, for all the people of Utah, for the people that believe in religious liberty and for people that believe in LGBT non-discrimination. Whether we have a bill passed or bills passed or not, we're going to get together, and I really want to invite every single person to grab the kids, because history may well be made today at 6 o'clock. If you only make one visit up to the Capitol ever, today's the day to come.
And is it true, Jim, that if the state of Utah takes this step, that it will distinguish us among states? Is it that?
If the legislature goes along, I've gotten calls from the national media today. They're looking at Utah for the very thing we talked about. Washington is a complete sinkhole of people that can't get along. I am incredibly proud of the ability of this state and guys like Steve Urquhart from St. George and I'm trying to think of their last names because Senator Adams. Senator Adams. These are tremendous men, Brad D. from the House, the Speaker, people that have come together, and we're not quite sure where the bill is going to go, but just the process has made our community a shining light on the Hill. It's been a tremendous process.
Yeah. Chris, will you be at the rally?
Absolutely.
So we've got agreement there.
Yep.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Chris Blake and by Jim DeBacchus. In our next segment, we're going to talk more about Capitol Hill.
Filling in for Greg Hughes, I'm Chris Blake on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Natalie Gochner in the political center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. We are sitting here in the speaker's office, bringing you Both Sides of the Aisle. There are about 12 hours left in the final day of our part-time legislature. And, you know, it's you can feel it. And I'm wondering, Chris, characterize what happens in this final day, and what are the big issues still to be resolved, and how would you just capture this session?
Yeah, if you were a member of the public coming up to watch the legislature and you were sitting in one of the galleries in the House or Senate, the thing you'd want to watch is you'd want to watch the speaker and key members of leadership and where they go. Do you know, do they bolt off the floor? Does the chief of staff come up and talk and then they both head out?
That's because it's live fire.
It absolutely is, mm-hmm. And things are moving. You'll see that we have a term of art here called they saunter, which means mm-hmm. they take a little break from the floor time. Oftentimes that saunter coincides with some key meeting that's going to be happening. There's conference committees.
Saunter really means that they're going to work.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, there's the bills that are just moving on the House and Senate floor here in these last hours. And a lot of activity. You'll see legislators stepping out into the hallway to talk to advocates and lobbyists and constituents. But watching that, that's the interplay that's really happening at these final days. The big things that are wrapping up here are the transportation funding package. Mm-hmm. That's one of the big keys.
That's one of the big, you know, things we think is going to happen.
Yeah, and that's a piece that I think has a domino effect on some other components, and that could be a big win for both the Senate and the House as they look at reforming that and doing some pretty massive things.
17 years without reform to our motor fuel tax
or
this
an increase,
year.
Not just reform, but an increase. Yeah. Absolutely,
Jim. What will your final 12 hours be like here on the Hill? Other than being on this great radio program?
Well, frankly, I'm taking the afternoon off. We're going to Wendover.
He's going to be on the fun bus.
Yeah, fun bus. You could call it that. You know, it's a very interesting, wonderful dynamic to be on that floor with 28 other senators. And by now, you either have the kind of camaraderie where you can go and kind of kneel down by another senator, put your arm around him and say, Senator, help me with this, or can you help me with the funding on this, or where are you? Or it is a wonderful esprit de corps. I mean, Margaret Dayton and I we probably only voted together three times on the session, at least on things that aren't 100%. But I can go over to Margaret and we can work and talk. There is an astonishing amount of congeniality that people might not expect. There is not another person on that floor that I don't respect, that I wouldn't go out of my way to accommodate in any way that I could, short of things I couldn't do.
Yeah.
But
remarkable.
I think that's how people would be, and I don't think it's just me. I mean, I think we have a body that understands that these are not a bunch of people that are trying to line their own pocket. These are not a lot of people that are driven by a lot of motivations other than they care about the state. And even those with whom I vociferously disagree, and goodness knows they're there, I have nothing but respect for where they are and where they stand. And from their perspective, they're doing the right thing.
Jim, would you say, speaking as a Democrat and relatively speaking, has this been a good year for Democrats on the Hill?
I give it a D-.
And so, what do you usually give it?
I usually give it...
I'm trying to get a relative.
An F.
Okay.
And so step up.
I just mean that in terms of if the Democrats were running the show, the priorities would be topsy-turvy. We would be doing things completely different. But when the other side has the majority, it's their show.
Yeah.
And they're fair to us.
Yeah.
You know, President Niederhauser is more than fair. There's none of there's stuff that the majority could do. I never get that sense. So yeah. I'm appreciative of that, other than they pass all the wrong bills.
I come from the university environment. D- is not very good. Chris, how would you rate the overall session?
Well, these final 12 hours are going to
determine
give it,
that.
Give
you
it
can't
the final
grade it
grade.
Yet.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because there are big things to happen. I want to echo Jim's point to begin with that I think the leaders, and I think Governor Herbert is going to be frustrated with some of that here if Healthy Utah doesn't pass or something doesn't finish there. But certainly the leaders, I think Speaker Hughes and President Niederhauser and their teams have worked really collaboratively, have worked well together, don't seem to have any real acrimony with one another. They have points of disagreement and things they want to focus on, but there seems to be a real positive spirit between those two groups, which I think is a great thing. I think that the session right now is headed towards an A grade, and in these final 12 hours, I think they can get there. You've got infrastructure funding. You've got the non-discrimination religious liberties bill.
Yeah.
There are number of other massive issues. So, you know, maybe it'll end up at an A-, but I think they're in a good shape.
It's not both sides of the aisle if there's not disagreement. We got D-, A-.
Are you going to cut the baby here? Where are you going,
Natalie? Where are you going?
Well, let's do this. Let's talk Healthy Utah. I mean, you.
Oh, you saw that, right?
Okay, because you've got Utah Cares and you've got Healthy Utah 2.0. One is a governor's proposal and am supported by the Senate, and then you have the House with the Utah Cares. I'm reading from yesterday's Salt Lake Tribune, but it summarizes it quite nicely, I think, because it says the House plan would cover about 60,000 people and cost $64 million for 2 years. Healthy Utah would cost the state $25 million and cover about twice as many people. And so I'm looking at that, and I'm an economist, so I'm all about opportunity cost. I'm looking at what's not being funded because we're willing to, you know, spend $64 million for half the coverage instead of $25 million for twice the coverage. I'm going to give my grade based on where they get on that compromise. So too early to say, but if they do nothing, so what did you call it, Chris? Healthy nothing?
Healthy nothing, yeah.
If they do healthy nothing, then I think we're, you know, below a B. And if we get some sort of compromise, we're above a B. How's that, Jim, for splitting the baby? I'm getting a thumbs up. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Chris Blake and by Jim DeBacchus. What else do you guys want to talk about? What bills are you still watching?
Well, let's talk Tesla. I'm disappointed to see the Tesla bill go down. I want to give the did some work on this bill. I want to give the auto dealers some credit for being willing to discuss this issue, but it raises something I raised last week about this sort of libertarian nature.
And the new economy.
What are the issues? There's somebody who doesn't even know what Tesla is.
Yeah, absolutely. So Tesla's a fully electric car. The way they have chosen to sell is direct to consumer rather than through the traditional car franchise model that we have in this country.
And if a listener drives down State Street, they'll see this new Tesla facility not quite opened yet, right?
Correct.
Because they can't open, right?
Well, they will be able to open as a service center,
okay,
but it won't be able to open as a dealership where you could go in and test drive the car. And that'll be the big thing.
Do you remember about what south it is?
I think it's 2300 South.
Okay. So
State
people ought to check it out because it has some glitter.
It does. And so if you went in there, you'd be able to look at the car from the outside, but you wouldn't be able to test drive. And you wouldn't be able to, if you're going to make this kind of an expenditure on a car, you want to be able to test drive. Theoretically, you couldn't order it directly on the internet here in Utah as well, although the internet's not quite regulated by state
law. Get to the core of this. What's the problem here?
I think you've got two problems. I think you have the dealers who have invested
a lot. Wait a minute now. I'm not sure everybody understands. What the state law says is
that you cannot own a dealership. A manufacturer of a car cannot own a dealership in the state of Utah.
Like GMC can't have a dealership.
Correct. Or GMC cannot own a dealership.
So it'd be like telling Apple, they have their Apple store, saying you can't sell your apples at an Apple store. You have to go through Best Buy. You have to go through Costco in order to sell.
And it's a great example because Tesla represents the future in a big way. And I've been told by real estate people that, you know, you watch that where that Tesla store is located, other things will happen in that neighborhood because of what it means.
And, you know, Natalie,
it's like an Apple store.
When I was getting started, you were working here at with the governor. We had a very similar debate happening about bricks and mortar stores,
mm-hmm.
the Nordstrom's, and they were going to go out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you've seen is those folks have co-opted, they've changed their business model, but now Nordstrom's not only sells in their bricks and mortars, they sell online.
They better have a good website or they're in trouble.
And I think auto dealers are going to have to find the same kind of balance. They're not going to go away. That's just the reality. You're going to have stock. You're going to have maybe 100, 200 years from now, they go away when we're flying around in our DeLoreans. But
and Jim, I think the point is that you have to have an economy that adapts to the new things going on and a legislative body that adapts to that. So, you know, we've got to work through these challenges.
Give me a break. This is a this is impossible. We're supposed to be the free enterprise state. If they want to have their own dealership here, go for it. I'll tell you what, Tesla, I'm making a deal here. I will take a dollar a year, and I'll be your franchise head.
Let's Jim's got it figured up. Out. Jim's, another bill that I'm quite interested in, I serve on the board of the Primary Children's Hospital, and we have this seatbelt bill that's passed both the House and Senate. It makes wearing a seatbelt a requirement and a primary offense, so a police officer can pull you over if you're not wearing a seatbelt. Right now, that's just for the young in our state. I think this is great public policy. I commend the legislator who sponsored this. I guess he's a highway patrolman. This
Representative Perry.
Okay, Representative Perry, good job. You guys, I'm guessing you supported that, Jim?
Absolutely. Great bill.
Yeah, good. Then there's another bill that I'm not so high on, and it's this one about having billboards on scenic byways. And I like the good representative that's proposed it, but I don't like this bill.
Yeah, Representative Noel has a bill to change where billboards can go. He would characterize it as a local control issue and trying to find the balance there between private property rights and local government having control and private companies being able to purchase appropriate sites to sell their wares. And so, this is one of those bills in the final 12 hours that could be a pretty emotional, heated debate as we come into the
My daughter lives in Boston, and I get an email from her. What is this? She read the news about this bill. This one caught her eye. She loves Utah's beautiful backcountry and doesn't want billboards, taken away from the view sheds.
Drive down 33rd South in West Valley mm-hmm. or State Street in Orem. That's what we're going to end up with in our most beautiful, sacred, amazing land. This is a catastrophic bill done for selfish purposes, and it ought to be killed. It ought to be strangled. That baby ought to be put in the microwave and turned up for 10 minutes. This is a terrible bill, and it's on the heels of another terrible decision. In effect, the legislature decided to do away with local historic districts as well. Mm. They're saying that if somebody wants to move into the avenues, bulldoze 10 houses and build a giant Kmart-like house, that their property rights can trump everybody else's rights to live in the kind of community that they, even as a majority of people and neighbors, want. It was another terrible decision. Give me a break. Historic districts are good things, and to just kill it flippantly and say all knowledge comes out of these bodies in Salt Lake and we're going to tell every neighborhood how to run it because we're smarter, that's part of the reason they got a D-.
Plenty of emotion on both sides of the aisle today. One other one that I'm just kind of interested in is this firing squad bill. And you made the point in our last session, Jim, that this is when our state can't get access to the chemicals that you use, to do lethal injection. And I'm just kind of going, I do not want to be the only state in the country that has a firing squad option for the death penalty. I'm hopeful that this one doesn't get signed.
Voted against it. Think it's terrible.
Chris, you didn't have a vote, but do you... from the political right, is this a good decision? Why can't we just wait till you get the drugs if it's that big of a deal?
If you can't have access to them. I'm going to say the state is thinking longer term. They're setting up their contingency. I'm in a different place on this. I'll leave that alone and let those in the higher pay grade make that decision.
Very good. Well, it's time for us to go to our gripes. I hope you guys are ready. Jim, you've had plenty today.
Okay, I'll have...
He's sitting up in his
chair. Do you mind if I throw another one
in? Let's do it.
I'll be really quick. Why is it that the legislature always wants to send messages, take your money back, Washington, to poor people? $30 million, the state board says, we don't want your stinking federal money. That's our state board of education. Healthy Utah, send back the money. And the top of all of this, there was an actual bill that died 2-2 in committee that would have returned $137 million for poor kids' breakfasts and lunches in the state of Utah. It died 2-2. Can you imagine where we're going? Stop sending messages to Washington and start funding education in the state.
And there's my gripe, Natalie.
Let's hear it, Chris.
I'm going to say I don't think the legislature and the governor and the state of Utah get enough credit for the way they budget and set things up. There was a big rally this week here at the Capitol on education funding. A 4% increase and fully funding growth is a massive infusion of cash into our schools. They're never going to get the credit for it. And this is the frustration I've always had, even working up here. No matter how much money they throw, it's never enough. And we spend it efficiently, we budget efficiently, and this is a massive infusion, and our legislators and governor deserve major props for making a big funding in our WPU.
And that's partly, I'm guessing, partly why you gave an A- for the session,
because
you feel like the education funding was there. And Jim, you see that differently.
Yeah, yeah. I see it differently. The governor asked for 6.3, we're barely at 4. And even if we got the 6.3, guess where we would be in state ranking for education per child? We would still be a proud 50th. We need to do better and stop patting ourselves on the back on how good we're doing when, you know what? We're not doing that good.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I have a gripe that deals with the proliferation of survey research, but it will take me a long time to develop the basis for that. But every time I turn around, there's a poll that says this, a poll that says that, and I think that it's gotten a little out of control. I hope we can talk about it more in our next segment of Both Sides of the Aisle. The program is produced by Ross Chambliss. Thank you for listening.